Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first and only bilingual show, not the only, but the very first bilingual show for CSN Podcast, the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, obviously affiliated with Circle Sanctuary. And tonight, I'm very happy, but well, the whole nation seems to be happy, I guess. I'm very happy for a number of reasons, and one of them is that we have Jason Mankey on the line. Hopefully he can connect. We were having a little bit of trouble, but let's see. In the meantime, to tell you, Jason Mankey is the third degree Garnerian High Priest and helps run two witchcraft covens in the San Francisco Bay Area with his wife, Eri. Jason is a popular speaker at pagan and witchcraft events across North America and Great Britain. He is the channel manager at Pathios Pagan, the world's most read pagan blogging site, and writes there at Raise the Horns. He also writes for the magazine Witches and Pagans. And Jason is the author of Transformative Witchcraft, The Witch's Wheel of the Year, Llewellyn's Little Book of Yule, and several books in Llewellyn's Witch Tools series. And today I invite him because he's got this new book that I'm fascinated by. It. It's called The Little Book of Yule. And from the book, we hear filled with dozens of magical tips, recipes, crafts, and spells, Llewellyn's Little Book of Yule shares everything you need to make your Yuletide memorable and enchanting. From wassail blessings to the spirits of the solstice, this book delves into the lore of familiar traditions as well as observances that might be brand new to you, making it an invaluable resource for bringing meaning and magic to your holiday season. And without further ado, let me hopefully welcome Jason. Hi, Jason, are you there?
I'm here. You can't keep me away.
That's what I, nor do I want to, honey. I'm so happy that you were able to connect. How are you?
Oh, things are good. It's a very cold day by our standards here in Northern California. It's 55, so it feels very Yule-like to me today.
Oh, wow. That is a hot day in Chicago. Actually, it is. You might not believe me. I don't know if you can hear this, but I am fanning myself because it's hot here in Chicago. By Chicago standards, we are just around the same 55, 60, but in November, it's really scary. Talk about global warming. And I'm fanning myself because it's hot. I think I also was a little nervous that you were having trouble connecting. I don't know why, but hey, I'm glad it's in the past and you're here. And I haven't seen you, PSG, in 2019. And I'm going to have to open the show asking you, how was PSG 2019 for you? Because you did a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful job with the May ritual. But I want to know, like, how do you feel about it? And how was your experience at PSG?
I always have a really great time at PSG. Everyone is so nice, and you go to a lot of festivals and you teach workshops and stuff, and nobody goes to the workshops, so like your soul is crushed and you're all depressed. But at PSG, people really go there because they want to learn things, they want to participate, they want to be involved, so that's always really gratifying, and everyone's so nice. PSG 2019, though, of course, was challenging, like many pagan festivals. The weather did not necessarily cooperate with with us very well, because, you know, we were like that half of the campground was stuck in some very, very serious mud. But I had a really good time, and I hope to be back in 2021 or 2022, depending on the schedule.
Right. Depending on what happened. I cannot believe you. Have you ever really seriously seen to through a workshop where nobody showed up?
I've never had nobody show up, but I have been to festivals where, you know, you work really hard on something and then two people show up. And then you know, by the same standard, though, you know, sometimes you sort of half-ass something and then 90 people show up. So you never know what you're going to get. But the outdoor festivals are always more challenging for people to show up at some of them. I think when you have to walk a quarter of the mile to the bathroom and cook your own food and things, sometimes going to workshops becomes secondary.
Yeah, I guess. And, you know, I hear you. I had that the two student or two people attending workshop experience. And the kicker is you have to do it, right? You still got to do it as you prepare it, whether it is 50 or 5. It's, you know, we love doing this and we're going to do it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you still have to go on with the show, but I will tell you, it's much harder sometimes to do something for two people when you're expecting to do it for 30 or more. You know, like the things that you've rehearsed, you know, all of my workshops, I tell lots of terrible jokes and stuff, and, you know, all that kind of goes out the window when you've only got two people. That's never happened at PSG, by the way. That's just some of the other ones, you know, and it doesn't happen very often. It's been a long time since it's actually happened, but it does sometimes.
So I know how you shy away from controversy and how you don't like to speak about things that are, you know, could be a little ruffling people's feathers and stuff. What's up with this election, man? Did you see that coming? Like, seriously, did you thought it was going to be like this?
Yes, I thought it was going to be almost exactly like this. I expected a lot of the swing states to be closed. I did not expect to know the outcome of the election until Thursday or Friday. So it didn't really surprise me very much. I also expected Biden to win. And by Wednesday, I was 100% sure Biden was going to win the election. Even though very few people shared my optimism, I was pretty confident by Wednesday afternoon. Once Wisconsin and Michigan went blue, I had a really good feeling about things. But, you know, it's also sad that one side can't accept the results of the election. That's really disappointing. I mean, I remember when Hillary lost in 2016, and I really, really loved Hillary. I was all about the pantsuit brigade and stuff. I think she's super smart and would have done an amazing job as president. You know, we didn't whine about it. You know, we didn't fight, like, liberals and Democrats didn't file a bunch of stupid court cases trying to get it thrown out. And that's what Trump's doing. You know, and Hillary beat him by 2 million votes. And, you know, and he's lost by over 4 million votes right now. And they're still trying to call this election into question. It's really sickening and sad for our democracy, I think.
Mm-hmm. It is disheartening that, I mean, I'm just scared, but I've been scared for 4 years, of course, because when you're queer, brown, witch, immigrant, Mexican woman, the last 4 years have been very, very scary, or whichever other variations and cumulative minority labels people have on their little back. But you know, I'm really concerned about the transition. I really think this is going to be the child that is going to be hiding behind the flag on the Oval Office, you know, no wanting to come out. And that is, I'm having, seriously, Jason, I'm having like a PTSD type of thing, mood swings. And I'm like, man, we're going to have to wait like this for another couple months. It's just, it's a little too much, you know, it really is. So.
I really wonder like what he's going to do the last 2 months that he's in the office, because he has the potential to do a lot of damage. And, You know, he's not accountable to anybody now. He doesn't have to run for re-election. He fired the Secretary of Defense today, and because he's a small, petulant child. And, yeah, I really do worry about it. The damage that Donald Trump has done to our country and has done to the rights and freedoms of our most vulnerable communities will not be remedied for decades to come because of all the people he's put on the judiciary thanks to his enablers in the Senate. And it's really sad. And, I'm a white guy with blonde hair. I mean, I'm probably okay, but I worry desperately about my friends. I worry about my friends in the LGBTQ plus community. I live in California. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of immigrants. I don't know the status of them. I don't care. They're good people. That's all that matters to me. I worry about them. You know, there's so many consequences from these 4 years that we've had, you know, that asshole in the White House, you know, and yeah, it worries me. And these next 2 months are going to be long, crazy months. Just what they do is anybody's guess.
I love that it was you I have scheduled for today because, really, tell us how you feel, Jason. I love it.
I'm usually not too scared.
Right? That was so cool. I was thinking about the video that we did at PSG to use it for promoted. But it was, it's so, out of time. Not out of time. What is the word? Kind of dated, you know, because we did it a year and a half ago, and I ended up not publishing it. But I was laughing because you were like, maybe I say something controversial, maybe I say something stupid, and I'm like, he's the perfect guest for this show because it's Lunatic Mondays. Anything can happen, people. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just gonna say, I do a fair number of podcasts and things, and I do worry someday that I'm going to, say something really offensive to somebody, you know, and try to think about it. But I'm pretty unfiltered, you know. I'm going to be as honest as I can most of the time. So, yeah, who knows? I might say something really stupid. We've got a lot of time left.
You got me cracking up. I think that as long as you're true to yourself, you know, because when we give the name to this show, back in the day, by the way, the show is going to be 5 years old. I'm so excited. In November, we turned five. So we're basically celebrating.
That's really impressive.
Our 5-year anniversary. Thank you. Yeah. And when we give it the name Lunatic Mondays, there were people that were not very happy about it. And this is back in our other house station that we used to have the show, of course. And I was thinking, it's not your show. Why do you have to worry about the name, you know? Oh, well, you know, how can you call it Lunatic? Because we are pagans? There's nothing wrong with saying something is lunatic. You know, the fact that you think it's something wrong with it, then maybe there's something wrong with you. But anyway, enough about me. What's going on with Atheist Pagan, man? Every other article that I see there, people get really passionate about it. And I don't think half of the time that the articles are that outrageous. Why do you think are we turning a little bit conservative with the pagans?
I think that certain times, certain articles attract a group of people who are very loud. I don't think that they represent the majority of pagans, though I do think that there are probably more conservative pagans than most of us think. You know, as someone who, you know, tours the country going to pagan events, I would say that probably 20 to 30% of our community probably identifies as conservative and might have even voted for Donald Trump. But I think people react, you know, in a very emotional way when they see something they don't agree with online. And I don't think they actually read the articles. You know, you're mostly, I think, talking about our pagan, Patheos Pagan Facebook page. And there are a lot of us who were very adamant that voting for Trump is a betrayal of pagan values. And I feel very strongly that that's the case. And a lot of us laid out why we think this way. My piece, especially, I thought was very nice. I talked about you know, how I knew people in the Midwest who voted for Trump in 2016. And a part of me, even though I disagreed with them, I at least understood it because he seemed to try to talk to those people, people who had lost manufacturing jobs and had been overlooked by Democrats for 10 to 20 years. You know, he was trying to talk to them. He was lying to them pretty much all the way through, but at least he was talking to them. So I understood that. But nobody, you know, got nuanced. Nobody cared about that. They were just like, oh, you don't like my guy. Well, you must be an awful person. And there's no politics and paganism and witchcraft. And I'm thinking to myself, yes, there's politics in everything. And calling yourself pagan or witch is pretty political because it immediately sets you apart. And if we look at witches, especially over history, they were people who threatened the social order, which to me is very, very political. So their comments were, I think, poorly informed, and, you know, they didn't even bother reading the articles. This was very sad, and I had to go moderate those threads. So it took probably 3 or 4 years off of my life. It was a very, very unfun experience, and I felt like I had to shower every time I went in and checked in
on
what gross things people were saying.
Yeah, people are very to jump the gun, as you said, without reading, because I'm not talking about my friends here, obviously, but I have had people sometimes that ask me, so are you a tarot reader? I'm like, do you read any half of the million things that I post about tarot? Because seriously, I've been asked if I'm a tarot reader, and I'm like, okay. So you see my stuff, but you don't look at it. And the same happens with articles, you know. I know I'm a person that don't particularly enjoy reading a lot. That's why I do oral tradition, oral teaching, oral communication, because I am not into reading. And I have told you this before, Jason Mankey. You are one of the few people that I actually read your stuff because it's very easy and engaging. It's very much, it's a lot of fun to read your stuff. So I don't know if people just don't read, man. They just, I hope this washes away a little bit, but people being in the sentiment of just fighting and arguing for argument's sake, you know?
I think people like arguing. I think people like jumping to conclusions. And I think people like sort of jumping on emotional roller coasters. And I think social media has conditioned us to kind of distill everything down to just 2 or 3 sentences. So if you see a headline that you don't like, no matter what it says, you know, people, you know, jump in with comments. On Pathos Pagan, we had one of our writers. He wrote an article, and it was called Men Cannot Be Witches. And it wasn't about that at all, but it was about checking to see if people would actually read the article or just react to the title. So when I looked at the comments, what do you mean men can't be witches? This article is bullshit because men can be witches, you know? And you're like, you've proven his point. You're commenting without reading the article. And it's very, very sad, especially for someone who spends a lot of time, you know, writing an article or something. You know, like most Pathos Pagan posts are probably 1,000 words. And it takes, you know, a couple of hours to write 1,000 words. And, you know, when people respond without reading it, it just feels like they don't care. And thank you for the nice words about my writing. I try very hard to write like I speak. It's just what I do naturally anyways. And a lot of people seem to like my writing style because of that. So I appreciate it.
I know for a fact, you know, I think it's part of me is how I learn. And I don't learn from writing. That's a given. But the other part I think is being Mexican is kind of like our cultural tradition to sit in circles and pass the knowledge from ear to mouth, you know. So reading stuff is, at least for me, I don't speak for all Mexicans by no means, but for me it's easier to ask you the questions and get the concepts, you know, while we're talking, than sitting and reading. But I will never forget that it was your Led Zeppelin article that got me into following you, and that's how I like met you and find you. And then I'm like, I like this dude. You're cool. Anyway, I invite you to take a 5-minute break. We're going to listen because, of course, we have to. Red Alabaster and Blue by Celia Farren, and we will be back with more here with Jason Mankey on Lunatic Mondays. Don't go anywhere.
He is a young African-American male. By the time he hits draft age, he might be dead or live in jail. And he found his life of crime when they said no child left behind. He's an American too. She is 90 with dementia all alone. Well, her family couldn't take it, so they put her in that home. And now she withers down to bones. At night she gently moans. She's an American too. She is a young Hmong refugee. She's four with child. If her daddy finds out, he will go insanely wild. They say they understand her plight, call themselves the Christian right. She's an American too. And all they wanted was to be free. But greenback dollars can't buy you dignity. Black gold and iceberg separate us from them. Time to rewrite the master plan. It is terminal, you see, he needs a tour. He's a second class citizen because he's uninsured, and he will leave his family broke because our healthcare is a joke. He's an American too. She is a Mexican, she loves her family. She risks her life to cross the border. She would give to be American too. He is a young, attractive man, and he is gay. Well, they feed him and burned him, and they left him that way. And now the 26th of April is the final day.
Back here on Lunes Lunaticos, Lunatic Mondays, our first bilingual show, English and Spanish, here on a CSM podcast, because there's also a show that runs in Spanish and Portuguese, and that is called Paganos del Mundo, and Paganos del Mundo still has two more shows, Jaguatuy Leva on the 21st from Spain, and then Patricia Finclair from Brazil in Portuguese on November 28th. On December 5th, Christian Ortiz is going to have a special for closing the year, practices and healing exercises. And then on December 12th, for those who speak Spanish, Don Mes Astrología del Año 2021, the astrology for 2021 with Monica Gobin. And then again, of course, Harwood Tuileva and Patricia Finclair. And yours truly on Lunatic Mondays, I'm going to be talking about winter holidays, winter festivities. Of course, we're going to keep talking with Jason about Yule tonight and about the little book of Yule. But I'm also going to be talking about interreligious celebrations. So on November 23rd, I'm going to have Reverend Florence Edwards Miller talking about interreligious celebration for winter holidays. That's in English. And on December 7th, I will have Carolina Gonzalez Velasquez and Harwood Tuileva speaking on Spanish about interreligious holidays. On December 14th, we're going to have Alex Cabot talking about the Cabot tradition, obviously, and its path in paganism. And on December 28th, we're going to have my dear friend and video blogger buddy, Chris Allen, talking about his new book, because everybody's writing books and they are all amazing and super interesting. And of course, don't miss all the shows by Selena Fox, Deborah Rose, David and Janet Ewan, and etc. Over 300 hours right now, there's over 300 hours on podcasts that you can download, listen, or share. And we're also on Spotify, iTunes, and TuneIn, I think is the other one, and wherever you get your podcast, that's where we are. So welcome back, Jason. How are you?
Things are good. It's always nice to hear people excited to talk about holiday traditions. We are rapidly getting to my favorite time of year, though it'll be interesting to see what it's like celebrating Yuletide during a pandemic.
Right? It's just, the ideal situation will be that people stay home and don't go outside and don't celebrate as usual with friends and family. But I don't know if we can contain ourselves. I hope we do, because we're still in the middle of a pandemic. What a incredible time to be alive. But Jason, tell us about your book and how you got inspired to talk about this very controversial topic.
So this is Llewellyn's Little Book of Yule. It's part of Llewellyn's Little Book series. And my friend Mickey Mueller wrote Llewellyn's Little Book of Halloween. And I thought it was really cute and very delightful. And I thought to myself, wow, you know what they should do is have a Llewellyn's little, it's kind of a tongue twister, Llewellyn's Little Book of Yule, just to go along with Halloween. And I sent Llewellyn that note. And they were like, wow, yes, we should totally do that. If you can write it in 3 weeks, we'll publish it next year. And I was like, no, I can't write it in 3 weeks. You can wait 2 years. So so they were very excited. And pretty much my ideas for the book, they wholeheartedly accepted. It's not, and I've read some reviews on the book, and you should never read your reviews. It's called the Llewellyn's Little Book of Yule. It's not called the Witch's Little Book of Yule or the Pagan's Little Book of Yule. It's about anybody who is a magical person. And it's about all the different holidays and traditions that are part of what I think of as Yuletide, which really just, you know, starts in late November and runs through the first 2 weeks of January. So it's not just about the winter solstice. And it would be impossible to write a book and ignore so many of the things that are associated with Christmas today. You know, you couldn't write a book about this time, about December, and not talk about Santa or the Krampus or Befana or Yule logs or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You know, my goal is to put everything that's good and fun about late November through early January into a book. So that's what I tried to do. So it's not just for witches. It's for anybody who's magical. And it's not just about the winter solstice. It's about making that whole extended period a magical time for yourself and sometimes for your family, because there's a lot of kind of family-ish activities in the book too.
That is great. You know, what I don't get is, of course, given my very personal opinion here, we don't live in a vacuum. As much as we will want to live in a pagan world where everybody is pagan, we do not live on that world. We live in a world that is predominantly Christian. And
yep,
most of the holidays are going to be Christian, and most of the people are going to celebrate the Christian ways. That said, I do have a grandson by law, and I love to get together with my grandson, and I love to, you know, decorate the tree and put the wreath and talk about pagan and maybe give my little one or two things that I know they are pagan in origin. And then, I don't know if you ever heard me saying this, Jason, but Mexico is one of the most, I consider, pagan cultures in the world, because the Catholicism that made it to Mexico when the colonizers came was already very, very influenced by pagan traditions. So the Catholicism in Mexico is very pagan, as well as the Catholicism in the whole world. But why do you think people would like to celebrate on a vacuum? What's wrong with celebrating on a multicultural way?
It's a really hard question to answer, and I'm not really sure what it is. I think that a lot of pagan people have very real resentments with Christianity, and a lot of them had very bad experiences within Christianity, and I think the resentment is certainly justified. But one of the things about Christmas, and this is, I'll argue this until I'm blue in the face, Christmas is not a Christian holiday. Sure, for some people, it's about the birth of Jesus, but a lot of the traditions, not all of them, and sometimes as pagans, I think we overinflate certain things that we say, oh, that's probably pagan in origin, and then sometimes it's not really. But a lot of the core beliefs and traditions around the Yuletide season most certainly predate the celebration of Christmas, December 25th, as the birth of Jesus. That's just the truth. And over the centuries, this holiday season that we have in December has picked up pagan elements, secular elements, certainly a few Christian elements, commercial elements, all kinds of different things. So it's not a season, I think, that belongs to just one religious group. I think it belongs to everyone. I can understand sort of wanting to get Christianity out of your life. Certainly we're bombarded with it on a daily basis, and it's weird to have that when you're not a part of the dominant religion. But to really take away anything that, or everything about Yule that was started during the Christian era, would be to lose a lot of things, like, you know, Christmas trees and stuff. And I don't want to lose those things. I think they're fun.
Yeah, they're very much fun. And why, again, you know, I mean, I respect everybody, and people don't have to do what they don't want to, but it is, I love how you say, you know, sometimes we aggrandize what is pagan in origin, and maybe it wasn't, you know, but when I talk about Day of the Dead, when I'm teaching, I tell people, well, this is what the book says, this is what the oral traditions say, and this is what I believe. But that doesn't matter. That is the truth, because I wasn't there, because they say they used to put like a real skulls on the altar. And I'm like, that would have been cool, but have you ever been in the presence of a real skull? The energy is overwhelming. So I don't think like it was a common practice. But we don't know because we weren't there, and my time machine is in the shop, so I haven't been able to go back there. So, you know, I mean, can we just get along? Do you have celebrations that are multicultural for winter? Do you have family who celebrate like on Christian ways or Catholic ways?
So I grew up in a Christian household. I was a Methodist and president of my church youth group. My wife grew up a Catholic. So our families have always celebrated Christmas. You know, we live 2,000 miles away from our families now. So our holiday celebrations are really between us and a couple of friends. But we've never stopped celebrating Christmas because that's what we grew up with. You know, and besides, everything's closed that day. What else are you going to do? You might as well unwrap some presents because unwrapping presents is fun. So, I mean, we still celebrate Christmas, and then we celebrate Yule, the winter solstice, as well, because that's an important day to us as pagans. But, you know, to me, it's just kind of this big, sloppy holiday mess. And, you know, when I look at something, like we put a nativity scene up in our house every year, and I love this little nativity scene. It looks like every person in it is a tree growing from the ground. So to me, it has these very pagan overtones. And when I see that little baby, you know, I don't see Jesus. I see, you know, the rebirth of the sun that a lot of pagans celebrate every year. When I look at those figures and I see them looking like trees, I see a connection to the earth and natural spaces and wild things. And, you know, you can interpret all of these things however you want to interpret them, because how they're interpreted is really up to us. So I've always loved Yuletide because I know that there's a big pagan celebration at the heart of it. The winter solstice is probably the oldest existing holiday tradition in the world. People were celebrating the winter solstice thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. And it just feels more festive when everyone else around you is celebrating something similar. You know, like Halloween, Samhain as witches, you know, it feels like everybody else is celebrating that too. And then at Yule, that's really the only two times a year you really get that super strongly. A little bit maybe at Ostara because of the Easter overlap, but you know, it just feels good when everything's got wreaths up. And you know, the Romans put wreaths on their doors for the Saturnalia, and people are, you know, drinking heavily and having parties and stuff, which is exactly what the Romans did at Saturnalia. And people are kissing under the mistletoe, which is what people did 400 years ago or whatever. It's really fun to get caught up in that energy and that history.
Yeah, I think it's, and I know a lot of people will be grieving this year. We have a little short of 250,000 people who passed away. So that's how many households are probably not be very celebratory this year. But I always love Yule, the Yuletide season, as a season of hope. You know, it's I think to the core for most people, that's what it is about. It's hope that the light will come on the sun or the sun, whichever, whether you use it with a U or with an O, is kind of like the promise of a new light and hope for the future, you know? I think that's kind of the core of it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, for me, every winter solstice, I like to just take a little moment to sit outside. And, you know, usually even here where I live near San Francisco, at least it's chilly in December, especially at night. But there's always this, like, this beautiful quiet in late December, you know, around Yule and around Christmas. And I like to just sit outside and experience that cool air, that quiet. And I think for a moment about the turning of the wheel and, you know, how the sun is going to get stronger in the sky from here on out. And I think you said it absolutely correctly. Yule is about hope. It's about hope for tomorrow. It's about hope for the future. It's about being able to see where we're going to be down the road. And while tomorrow is not going to look much different than today, you know, like we get like an extra minute every day, you know, as we get past the solstice. So, you know, you can't see the change immediately, but you know that it's there and you know that it's coming. And it's always a good feeling.
Yeah, the promise that it's coming, that's what the good feeling is. We have Lourdes on the chat room, and I want to pass you, Jason, what she said. She said, I love reading his books, and I love his writing style. I am to read his book in 2 days. What I meant to say, I'm able to read his book in 2 days. Yeah, I share that feeling, because other than, I don't know, the Da Vinci Code that I read like in a week, I've been able to read your stuff that quickly too, because I don't know, there's something so welcoming about the way you write, and I welcome that, ha ha, pun intended. So what all do we pagans believe that is absolutely 100% rooted in 5,000-year-old pagan tradition, and you discover by writing the book that is not really that old and is not exclusively pagan? Come on, break our hearts.
Oh, no, I don't like breaking people's hearts. But I will say that, like, the fundamentals of the holiday season are really very pagan in origin, and they really do date back to the Roman Saturnalia and, to a lesser extent, the Germanic or Norse celebration of Yule. So when you think of the holidays and you think of festive holidays, you think of having fun, you think of a lot of people maybe getting into trouble and drinking too much. All of that goes back to the Romans. Even Christmas carols go back to the Romans. They loved singing songs during the Saturnalia. And when Christians adopted Christmas, the church was like aghast that people would want to sing anything that was joyful and fun. So anytime, you know, you sing Rudolph or something, you're really connecting to the Saturnalia in a way, because it's the kind of silly thing that they would have probably sang. And then the holiday decorations that we use, so much of them also date back to that period. So, you know, the ancient pagans didn't put up trees. They just didn't. But they did bring in the branches from all of those evergreen trees and decorate those houses with those boughs from trees. And they decorated with holly and they decorated with ivy. You know, almost all of the traditional things that people decorate their homes with, pagans were doing that 2,000 years ago. There are a lot of traditions that we've sort of lost along the way that were very, very popular for almost 2,000 plus years or so. One of my favorite of those traditions is called Misrule, and Misrule was about subverting the social order. And there are a lot of things that are kind of descend from Misrule, like wassailing is one of them. But during the Saturnalia in particular, you know, sadly, the Roman Empire was an empire built on slavery, so it shares a lot with the United States. And during the Saturnalia, though, it was the one time of year where slave owners served their slaves, and slaves were given the best food in the house and the best drink, because, again, they were inverting the social order. Once the Roman Empire fell apart and everything kind of spread out, that tradition stayed, and it was adopted by churches, which would sometimes put a child, like a kid, like a 12-year-old, in charge of the church for the day or whatever. He would be the bishop for a day. In the Americans, the tradition of serving slaves like the best food and the best drink and everyone being equal for a day was done on Christmas, again, a callback to Saturnalia traditions. When we think of wassailing today, we often think of, oh, it's just sort of Christmas caroling. But wassailing was much more than Christmas caroling for many, many centuries. And wassailing was a continuation of Misrule. You would go door to door, and you would sing songs to people who had more money than you did. And you, once you were done, they would invite you inside the house and give you fine food, and they would give you the best booze. And that was expected. It was a chance to turn the social order, to do things in a different way. And that's, you know, and today, as I said, you know, we think of wassailing, we don't think of that, but that's exactly what it was for a long, long time. The idea of trick or treat, we think of that as a Halloween thing, but really that was a part of Misrule. It's really much more of a Christmas sort of idea and execution. You know, if you don't give us what we want, we are going to play a prank on your house. And people who didn't play along with Misrule, who didn't respect the wassailing or whatever, they were often the victims of petty vandalism. In the beginning of the 19th century, sadly, the MIS decided they didn't want to play Misrule games anymore. They didn't want wassailers coming to the door. They didn't want to give away stuff. So they worked very hard to sort of change Christmas time institutionally, to make it a holiday for children, to make it a holiday that revolved around family instead of loud revels with your friends outside. And so Misrule kind of went away. But it sort of still exists, though, in New Year's Eve parties, and it still exists, I think, in office parties. You know, there's the story of the legendary office parties where, you know, where people are making copies of their butts and stuff on the Xerox machine. That, to me, is very, very Misrule and very, very, very Saturnalia. And at the same time, when the Romans were doing Saturnalia and they were practicing all of these Misrule things, they were also engaging in mumming, which was dressing up in various costumes, oftentimes cross-dressing, men dressing as women and women dressing as men, and it was completely socially acceptable because, again, it was a time to turn the normal world upon its ear a little bit and to really be free and to do what you wanted. Eventually, in some areas, that mumming turned into more of like wearing a costume, sort of like Halloween. When you think of Mardi Gras in New Orleans, some of those traditions actually come from the Christmas season. The idea that you're going to dress up for this big party is very, very Yuletide-ish in its own way. In Newfoundland, in Canada today, there's like this really fascinating mumming tradition where people dress up in costumes, usually not elaborate costumes, more like a bed sheet kind of thing over your head, or maybe you wear your mother's bra on the outside of your clothes. The costumes look like something from The Purge most of the time. But in Newfoundland, they would go door to door and you'd invite the mummers in. And these are people that you can't see, but you can't see their faces, and you invite them in. And then you were supposed to ask them questions and figure out who person is under the costume. And the mummers wouldn't talk to you using their normal voice. They would talk to you like while inhaling. So they would talk like this, which is also creepy. And then after the game of guessing who the mummer is, you know, they would eat and drink together and all that. But that's a tradition that, you know, really, really old, hundreds and hundreds of years old, most likely thousands of years old. And, you know, it still exists in places. Philadelphia has the largest mummers parade in the world today on January 1st, and we hardly ever hear anything about it. And has some spectacular costumes. Yeah. So there's a lot of things.
I had no idea.
There's a lot of things that are genuinely ancient that have survived into modern times. Some of the figures, though, that we associate with the Yuletide, it's hard to say. There's been a story about the Krampus being the child of Hela, the goddess, and stuff that's been making its way around the internet and the pagan world the last couple of years. And apparently, that comes from a video game. There's no evidence that that's the case. And the Krampus first shows up in the 16th century, which is a little late if it's a genuine pagan survival, but nobody really knows. So that's one that may or may not be genuinely ancient. We don't know. There's another myth, you know, Santa was a shaman. His was a book that came out about 20 years ago. And it's a fun little idea, but, you know, you can really trace how Santa was formed over the centuries, and it began in the 12th century in Paris. But in defense of pagans and Santa Claus, there's a lot of Odin in Santa Claus, because when he got to the Netherlands, Odin really still, even if he wasn't being worshipped actively as a god. And so some of the magical things that were associated with Odin became a part of St. Nicholas, Santa Claus.
You know, thank you so much for all of that, and I'm sure all of that is in the book, yes? That has to be.
I think so.
Yeah.
One of the problems with the book, though, it's called Llewellyn's Little Book of Yule, so, like, you know, it's little. So, I tried to write all of these things and to cram it all in there, so that was tricky. You know, like, sometimes I didn't get to write as much about certain things as I really wanted to.
I love that you talk about Krampus because, A, I love him. He's my main man. And B, horn gods, you kind of have an affinity for them. So I know you like them, and I do too. But about 5 years ago, maybe about 6 years ago, I was thinking about how Krampus was doing the crossover from, like, scary European stories to American folklore for winter. And I said, you know, watch, within 5 or 10 years, the Christmas season in the United States is going to fill with scary stories. And I am happy to announce that I wasn't that wrong. It's like more and more people are giving in into Krampus, and not only Krampus, but other scary Christmas or scary winter folk tales. And I'm so happy to hear you saying that this is nothing new. This has been happening for many years.
There's a long history of telling ghost stories near Christmas. I mean, even the most famous Christmas story of all time, sorry, Jesus, is Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, which features a ghost. I mean, that's a ghost story. So, you know, it's a long tradition of telling scary stories around that time. And, you know, not all of the traditions, like Krampus, were always super nice. You know, there is kind of a, I don't want to say evil, because I don't think the Krampus is evil, but he is. He is the muscle of the holidays, you know, like if you're a bad kid and, you know, you're going to pay consequences, and Krampus is the one who's going to deliver those consequences. We have a coven mate who grew up in Croatia, and Krampus is still pretty popular in Croatia from Germany on through down in that area. And she was telling us that as a child, she was like really, really genuinely frightened of Krampus. You know, it was something that her parents told her about, and it did keep her up at night, which I always found really cute and funny. Mm-hmm. And I'm really enjoying right now, because it feels like in the last 10, 15 years especially, as you said, you're seeing a lot of these old traditions that are associated with Yuletide come back, and they're on a bigger stage again. For a long time, the only thing that anybody ever talked about in the United States was Santa Claus. But there are lots and lots of really great holiday figures. And, you know, it's about time that people are talking about them again, or that they're showing up. You know, Chicago has the Christkindl Market. And Christkindl is a female version of Santa Claus, originally based on the baby Jesus. But then after the idea was put together, they had women, young ladies, about 12, 13, dressing up as this figure, and it became sort of like a Christmas angel instead. And, I mean, I think that's great, because we need more than just, you know, old guys with beards representing the season. We should have all these different kinds of things. And it's nice to see it all kind of slowly come flooding back.
It is indeed, and it is refreshing to, you know, this is my personal opinion, of course, don't mean to offend anybody, but I think the holiday is moving, or has been moving slowly, from being very religious on the last 1500 years, maybe, to become a little bit more secular and traditional. And for a lot of people, it conserves a very heavily religious aspect of it, but it is more, as you and I were saying earlier, about hope and togetherness, family, and et cetera, don't you think?
You know, the holidays are really what you make of them, and there's always been kind of this battle. If you look at the whole history of Christmas, you know, like people in the conservative spheres often talk about a war on Christmas, which is really silly, because if they were to go back and read their history, they would see that the biggest war on Christmas has always been amongst Christians trying to tamp down on the holiday. So Increase Mather, who is the son of Cotton Mather, who was associated with the Salem witch trials, you know, once wrote about the Christmas season, and he said he hated the Christmas season because it was basically just people fornicating and drinking and gambling. And he said he knew that it was a pagan holiday. You know, this is like about 1700. So there's always been this tension around Christmas
mm-hmm.
because it is very, very pagan. And a lot of Christians have known this for a long, long time. You know, it's nothing new that the holiday is secular, because the holiday has almost always been secular. There's not really a whole lot in the, you know, in the holiday that's religious. I mean, there are some people who might put up a nativity scene or something, but that's about it. That's like the only really religious thing in the holiday. And I knew that as a kid, you know, we didn't like pray to Jesus before we opened presents. We just opened presents. Our church
mm-hmm.
like didn't even expect anyone to show up on Christmas Day. Christmas Eve, maybe, but Christmas Day, no, that was a day you spent with your family doing things. So, I mean, it's always been
mm-hmm.
a very secular holiday, and it's always been a very magical holiday. You know, we don't think
yeah.
about it like this, but, I mean, what is Santa if he's not a magical being? And when you think about Christmas and the holiday season, you always, you know, read about Christmas miracles and, you know, holiday,
mm-hmm.
you know, miraculous things. This is the one time of year that people are encouraged to believe in magic. You know, as witches
right.
and pagans, we should really revel in that. And I think it's lovely. And most of the best traditions around the holidays, whether it's flying reindeer or elves that make toys, or, you know, logs that burn for a long, long time in your fireplace. I mean, that's all pretty magical stuff.
It is indeed. And I love how poetically and magically you speak about it. I can wait until I have my copy in my hands. Of course, I will wait for a signed copy, as usual. Tell us where can we, because time flies when you're having fun, and it's already almost 8 o'clock. So I, of course, want you to tell the public, where can they get the book, and what are our future plans? I know almost nobody's doing in-person teaching or workshops, but do you have any online stuff that you're appearing in? But first, the book. Where can they get the book?
So the book you can get anywhere. It's probably for sale at all the major bookstores. You know, it's a Llewellyn book, so it's not hard to find. I'm not hard to find. If you just Google Jason Mankey, you'll find all kinds of things with my name on them. Some of them happy, some of them about people who hate me, whatever it is. I'm there. So I'm easy to find. Yeah, which is great. I know the book's on Amazon, so I always, you know, support people buying books through their local metaphysical and or witch shop. In 2 weeks, I will be doing a free workshop on just Yule. Like, I'm just going to talk about Yule for an hour. It's kind of my virtual book launch because, you know, I can't have a book signing or anything due to COVID. And that is going to be on November 19th on a Thursday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 5 Pacific. And it's just on my Facebook page. I'm just going to go live and talk for an hour about Yule, because I'm very excited about it, as you can see or hear tonight. So there's that. My next book comes out in May or June, and it's called The Horned God of the Witches. And it does have a long section on the Krampus.
Yay! Remind us, what time is going to be this live event on your Facebook page on November 19th?
It's going to be at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, on Thursday, November 19th. So it's the Thursday before American Thanksgiving, which to
Beautiful.
Me is kind of like the start of Yuletide.
Yeah, some people call it the practice Christmas. the practice Christmas, because they eat the same and they get together the same, and, you know, it's very much the same, but, you know, it's beautiful.
Is my favorite holiday, believe it or not.
I like it a lot, and I'm going to leave you this little reflection. I don't know if you knew this, Jason, but immigrant families that come to the United States, we, the immigrants, are very fond to Thanksgiving, because it's usually the very first introduction to America, to the culture of the United States. To have a holiday that for us represents welcoming of the immigrants, which we know in reality that's not the story of Thanksgiving, but that's how it's presented to most immigrants. Like, hey, this is a holiday for y'all, so let's celebrate Thanksgiving and come have a feast with us. And you can find that in one of the books of, oh, I forgot his name now. He's a Spanish anchor. Of course, the book is in Spanish. I forgot now. Jorge Ramos. Jorge Ramos, he writes about Sanguivis, you know, gives it a Spanglish name because it's not Thanksgiving in Spanish, it's Sanguivis. And yeah, it is a pretty cool holiday that embraces, for in our culture, in the Latino culture in the United States, it embraces immigration. So, of course, I'm very fond of it. Go ahead, Jason.
There's, for most people, like, I don't think most people know this, but like the history of Thanksgiving that we get in the United States is completely wrong and was written at the end of the 19th century. And the people who first celebrated Thanksgiving did not celebrate it pilgrims at all. That was sort of a later addition. So I can also talk about Thanksgiving for a long time. I love holidays. That is also in Llewellyn's little book of Yule, because there's a little tiny section on Thanksgiving. But
get out of here.
As I said,
oh, well, if you were not ready to buy the book, there you go. You know? Thank you so much.
Comes with free gravy.
Right.
Thank you for
right.
having
Can
me.
Have...
It's always really fun.
Of course, it's really fun to have you, and thank you for indulge in my political shenanigans at the beginning, because I know you're as passionate as I am about it. And thank you to Lourdes Santiago, who is always here, and she's always in the chat room, and she deserves the VIP listener treatment. So thank you, Lourdes, and thank you, Jason, and thank you to everyone who will listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere where you get your podcasts, or Blog Talk Radio, of course. Follow CSMP, please. And Jason, I leave you the microphones so you can say goodnight to your audience tonight.
Hey, thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. And hopefully I'll see you all, or let, like, at least whatever that passes for these days soon.
There you have it, folks. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And tonight we're going to say goodnight listening to Emerald Rose. Of course, Santa Claus is pagan too. Never forget that you are loved. Goodbye.
Santa Claus is pagan too, just like all the rest. And if you are a merry witch, he'll bring you all the best. So get that star up on the roof and make those cookies too. This Christmas time is really Yule and Santa's pagan too. Buddha belly and his socks, the holly king. You dressed him in that British coat, the cap's a Nordic thing. You took the horns right off his head and stuck them on his ear. But he still flies high like Jupiter with a belly full of beer. Hey, Santa Claus is pagan too, just like all the rest. And if you are a merry witch, he'll bring you all the best. So get that star up on the roof and bake those cookies too. Cause Christmas time is really Yule and Santa's pagan too. Now history says Christ was likely not a Capricorn. If you want to share our Yule, we don't care when he's born. Come celebrate the dawning of the Sun King's bright rebirth. And if you practice what you preach, we'll all have peace on earth. Hey, Santa Claus is pagan too, just like all the rest. And if you are a merry witch, he'll bring you all the best. So get that star up on the roof and bake those cookies too. Cause Christmas time is really Yule and Santa's pagan too. Way more jolly than most Christians would require. And if you weren't so busy, he'd be dancing round his fire. Yeah, you can call it Christmas, you got a sleigh out gun. But just you wait till Beltane, and we'll see who's having fun. Hey, Santa Claus is pagan too, just like all the rest. And if you are a merry witch, he'll bring you all the best. So get that star up on the roof and bake those
cookies too. Cause Christmas time is really Yule and Santa's pagan too. Hey! Santa Claus is pagan too, just like all the rest. And if you are a merry witch, he'll bring you all the best. So get that star up on the roof and bake those cookies too. Cause Christmas time is really Yule and Santa's pagan too.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.